Today's scripture reading comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15, verses 1 to 3.
May the words of my mouth,
verses 11 to 32,
the meditations of our hearts, and the actions of our lives.
Today's gospel story comes from a chapter filled with stories of the lost.
Our strength and our Redeemer.
The lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost brothers. When we are lost, how can we find our way home? And if
Maya
we have stomped
Angelou
off,
once
what
said,
kind of reception
love
can we
knows
expect?
No barriers. It jumps hurdles,
now,
leaps fences,
all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him.
To arrive at its
and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.
So let's start by putting everything on the table.
So he told them this parable. Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons.
Brothers,
the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.
Older brothers and sisters, how many have we got?
So he divided his property between them.
You can actually admit it. It's okay.
A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country.
Okay.
And there he squandered his property in dissolute living.
Not easy being one to whom all the responsibility ends
when he had
up
spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country.
It's not easy,
and he began to be in need.
And when things fall
so
apart,
he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating.
Yeah,
and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion.
It's never really fair, is it?
He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you.
I
am no longer worthy to be called your son.
Anybody ever, is that ringing any bells?
But the father said to his slaves, quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.
They'll just give me enough freedom.
And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on.
You always want your children.
He replied, your brother has come.
Wise choices, right?
And your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got back safe and sound.
And you always want them to feel like
then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, listen, for all these years, I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed
your
command. Yet you have given me a young goat, so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.
Doesn't even touch on.
Then the father said to him, son, you were always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had come to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found.
Families are complicated.
Listen to what the Spirit is saying
to the
church.
Think about your family. Think about the number of children that are in it, either your children or your brothers and sisters. Think about the various different combinations of relationships that are there. It's complicated. This prodigal son story gives us a bit of a case study in family systems, family rivalries, and how forgiveness works or doesn't work in families. And if we look at the prodigal son story from the perspective of each of the different characters, we discover that every single person in this story has a perfectly understandable point of view. I mean, think about this. Think about the eldest son. Only two brothers mentioned, two very different brothers, and they never see eye to eye. Always lumped together, given the same privileges, when you'd been the only one to actually work for it. But your father needed you, and you were always there. You knew that he appreciated it. But his attentiveness to your younger brother just kind of stuck in your craw. So when he left, taking half of the inheritance with him, well, it was a mingling of feelings, but there was relief in there. But you could also see the anguish in your father's face. How could that little punk do this to him? How could he do it? The grief, the public humiliation, the shame. You would never put your father through this, but this little punk would. And as the weeks and the months went by and the anguish never left your father's face, you realized that whether he was there or whether he was not there, the beggar still had power. Part of you hoped he was just gone, maybe dead. You would do your best to help your father carry on. And after a while, you thought you were actually making progress, getting somewhere. He was finally seeming to let the kid go, find joy in a day, you know? And just when you thought you were making progress, who shows up? That little... And after all he put your father through to show up now that the healing actually looked like it was starting, and your father, he still couldn't help himself. Still opened the door wide, made a huge fuss over the little guy. And after all you had done, after all your undying devotion and dedication, appreciated, but appreciated in an everyday sort of way, well, just a little affection would have been nice. You can get it, eh? Can get where he's coming from. And think about the younger one for a moment. Can you understand what it would be like growing up in the shadow of an overachiever like your older brother? Always able to do things the right way and a little better. Always able to win an argument. Always able to be just a little more logical. Can you understand what it would be like when this is combined with an over-attentive father? Never allowed to make your own decisions, never allowed to make your own mistakes, every moment watched by a father and criticized by a brother. Never given the right to just fail and learn from it. Try your own wings. And this for so long that there seemed to be no option. How do I break free of this? How do I get out from under this? I'm just going to have to leave. And so you do, but you never had a chance to learn the ways of the world. So when you finally did make it out on your own, you had no experience. You had to try everything, do everything, experience everything. It was so fresh. Things you'd never been allowed to experience before, not even taste. And it took a while, but eventually it all went sour. and at rock bottom, you realized that the motives behind your father's protectiveness, well, that was, the motive behind that was fear of exactly what you are experiencing right now. Fear of finding yourself in the predicament that you're in. And also a love and an affection that you kind of had taken for granted over the years. And then in the midst of that, you realize the pain you caused. So you do the gutsiest thing you've ever done in your life. More gutsy than leaving. Going back. Face the music. It's an understandable kind of situation, eh? Well, think about the father in this story. I mean, how does it feel to have a child leave under a cloud? Leave kicking over the traces to a place that you don't know, among people that you don't know. Your child, whom you cared for from infancy, out of reach, out of touch, gone without a trace. And not only is there the pain of a son having rejected the family, but there's the community shame too. The son asks for his inheritance. Dad, I want to act as if you're already dead. Give me half of the family inheritance. Which, from the community's perspective, is also, from a Jewish perspective, given initially by God. To have that squandered and end up in the hands of other tribes, well, that's just shameful. To end up living among pigs. Pigs, not chickens or other people. Pigs, think about the Jewish dietary laws. Think about cloven hooves. Think about all that you're not supposed to touch and have stuff to do with. And that's where he ends up. The shame of it. Not to mention constantly wondering about whether you had been fair. Whether you'd done something dreadfully wrong in your parenting. Grappling with your own resentment at the treatment of this son of yours. And yet feeling like there was so little that you could have done with this renegade child. And then, like a miracle, he returns as if from the grave that you had created in your mind. He returns. And with remorse. Understanding the pain that you've been through. I mean, justice requires that he continue to be on the outside. The angry judgment would be perfectly understandable. He has treated you like you were dead. The community like they are worthless. The blessing of God like it matters nothing. The covenant with contempt. But in the kingdom of God, when we choose the values that Jesus is espousing, there's other bottom lines. And in the mixed and surging emotions, love jumps the fences that we have created in our internal world and in our external world, breaks through and overwhelms everything else. The thing I love about Jesus' parables is that they're so real, so much like my life and your life. Sometimes they indulge in hyperbole, but those phrases, this son of yours, you know, those phrases that speak of what we live are so real. They capture the conflicts and the mixed emotions that are the currency of our life. And in this case, paints a picture of a way that we set up fences around our love. Understandably, I mean, sometimes for really good reason, but the fences are still there. But God's love is prodigal. It's an unfamiliar word in today's language. It means foolish. It means wasteful. Unconfined by the patterns that life has worn into our psyche, into our life. The real prodigal one here is not so much the son, but the father, who refuses to be confined by the rules, by common sense, by the understandable protection that our egos set so that we won't be hurt again. And you know, I think that the world needs prodigal love. Because so many of us are older brothers silently stuck behind the fences of our resentments. Or so many of us are younger brothers and sisters unable to step out from behind our shame. I think the world needs prodigal churches. Because so many churches have replaced the radical, foolish gospel with a more domesticated, institutionalized one that preserves rituals and buildings and theological statements in the face of folks who would have us lay them down so that we might welcome the lost soul. The good news is that love is bigger than all of that. The good news is that love is going to be love. God's love is in the world and alive. The good news is that love will not be bound. That grace will not be fenced in. And our challenge is to be foolish enough to join in with God's love that is so prodigal.